everybody. Gregory Connolly here with another edition of the Your Video Store Shelf podcast here at yourvideostoreshelf.com. Tonight on the show, we have a bona fide CEO of an actual legitimate company who releases plenty of cinema to the great market today. And his name, Michael Scholl, and his company, Aristocle Entertainment, and the film we're promoting here is Eating Out 2 Sloppy Seconds, which is one of those films that actually manages to get two sexual innuendos in the title. So I am proud to have Michael on the show today. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
Very good. So we are here today to talk about Eating Out 2 Sloppy Seconds, which has the great honor of being the first gay theatrical release.
That is correct.
So tell us about Eating Out 2.
Well, Eating Out 2 is the sequel to Eating Out 1. And Eating Out 1 was the very first film that I ever produced. And from that, I enjoyed the experience a lot because I wanted to create a film that was funny and it was sexy. And I felt that it was really done from the gay perspective, young gay perspective, and at the same time was something that was interesting to a wider audience in a lot of cases. And one of the cool things about what we do is we put gay sexuality and straight sexuality in the same arena. So it's not one is better than the other. It's just that we're all here and we're all having a good time.
That's what I was about to mention about how there are likely, I would say maybe two people that are actually gay listening to this show, and everyone else is probably straight and wondering why the hell I did this interview. And I just want to say that there's nothing wrong with good old gay cinema, as by I reviewed a film. Did you say it was 8 attitudes or 10 attitudes?
10 attitudes.
10 attitudes. You can check that review out in the archives, and that was a fine film. And Eating Out has been said to be even better than 10 attitudes. And as a result, I knew that Michael was going to be a good guest. And that's why I got him on. And Michael, so Eating Out 2, what plot are we in for on this one?
Well, what we do is in the first one, we've got a gay guy and a straight guy that are roommates, and the straight guy can't understand why the gay guy's getting all the hot chicks, and then he has to pretend to be gay to get sex with the hot chick that he wants to have sex with. In this one, we turn the tables around, and the gay guy wants to have sex with an ex-gay. And so in order to do that, he has to pretend that he's an ex-gay. And by the end of the movie, I don't know how out there I can get on this podcast, but...
You can say whatever you want. I had a softcore porn director on this show, and we, even though this is an internet radio show, I'm surprised the FCC didn't call me.
Well, bottom line is he has to eat out the chick this time. So instead of the guy getting a blowjob, the straight guy getting a blowjob from a gay guy, we've got the gay guy giving cunnilingus to the girl to prove to the other guy that he's really straight.
And I do have to say,
coming out group.
Sounds good, and I do have to say that I had a director on the show a few weeks ago, and I mentioned how on IMDb one of the keywords for one of his movies was cunnilingus, and sadly the young man did not know what cunnilingus meant.
Oh well, I'm gay, but I still know what cunnilingus means.
Yeah.
I don't want to experience it, but I know what it is.
It's not too bad. You get used to it.
Yeah, I've been told. In fact, that's one of the things that's demonstrated in Eating Out Part 2.
There you go.
And actually, I said they meet in a coming out group, but actually they meet in an ex-gay group called Homo No More.
I can't think of the Homo No More without both. There's a Will and Grace episode with that, and then there was also... But I'm a Cheerleader, the classic
piece
of gay cinema,
exactly.
With RuPaul as the ex-gay, if I remember correctly.
That is correct.
So with your films, you go for a very campy, sexy comedy feel, correct?
The two films that I've produced, absolutely. So the two films, and that's one of my passions that I would like to do more of and continue to do more of. And then, of course, 10 Attitudes was a comedy and it's sexy as well. So we have a lot of that. We do have mainstream films. We have foreign films, a wide variety.
So Aristocle Entertainment, I got to always make sure I say that right, it It's more than just the production company. You guys distribute, what, like 10 movies a year nowadays?
Actually, over 20. Somewhere between 20
and
30.
You moved up.
Yes, and there's over 80 titles in our library.
Because I stumbled upon an old article about a Catherine Weigel, a business coach, giving you tips on how to get things better. And you mentioned how you think it was you wanted, your goal was to have something like 500 films in the library?
That, yeah, not up to 500 yet, but I think also at that time, as you were just mentioning, I was looking at doing 10 a year, and now we're somewhere between 20 and 30 a year.
Nice. And here's a question that was actually on my mind the first time that I had the opportunity to do this interview. At what point are your films now being accepted into the Blockbusters and Hollywood Videos of the world, and when did that actually happen?
The very first film that I put into mainstream distribution goes way back to the Greg Louganis story with Mario Lopez. And that was, it's over, I think it's about 10 years, I forget, but I believe it's about 10 years ago that we did that. And we also did a film called Kizuna, which was the first gay Japanese animation film. That film's not a film that is in my library anymore, because it is, that was over 10 years ago and the licenses had run out. So, you know, since then it's been on and off, and the mainstream stores don't take every single title that we've put out. And it's usually not a question of the sexuality that's in the film. It's more a question of the budget values. Some of our films have, you know, high enough budget values. Sometimes we have films that the budget values aren't quite up to par, but I think they work for the nichiest part of our audience. And then sometimes the films are like a little bit too over the edge sexually. But generally, if there's not a lot of softcore activity in a film, then it's something that's going to be considered by all the major retailers. So long answer. I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, and in the case of Eating Out too, you actually there's the old practice in the video distribution business where you have box art A and box art B. If you sell to Nebraska, you may go with box art B. And what was the new subtitle for Eating Out 2 instead of Sloppy Seconds?
We got Eating Out Part 2, Sloppy Seconds, and then Eating Out 2, Different Rocks. And hopefully most people realize that when we said Different Rocks, we were talking about it's like, it rocks, it's cool. Some people didn't immediately pick up on that, but a lot of people, including the New York Times, would not publish an ad for Sloppy Seconds.
Oh, that's a shame. As if, as I said, one sexual innuendo is okay, but the second one is not.
That's kind of what we found out. It was enough with the first one and then number two. And then that is where there is a line with films that appeal to a gay market. Then you have Eating Out, you have Sloppy Seconds, and then you have a hot-looking guy on the cover with a bare chest, and it's just a little bit too much for some people. Whereas, so I think what I find with the gay titles that have a gay theme to it, the line in the sand is just a little bit more reserved. It's not like it's an absolute no anymore, which it used to be when we would go to a lot of different avenues to sell or promote or get reviewed. But the line in the sand is still slightly more reserved and conservative.
Are there still newspapers out there who just won't touch Eating Out 2?
Oh, I'm sure there are. I don't know if they'll say it or that it's very easy to not pick up the film just because it's an independent that doesn't have, you know, major current box office stars.
Mm.
So it's, you know, you can't, sometimes the actual reality is there are some stores that don't cater it to a niche audience. They're top 40 stores. They just want the big box office played at thousands of theaters films. So we have that obstacle because most of the films that we pick up obviously, you know, are not getting wide theatrical release.
And what's kind of funny is that with you saying that you had to take it easy, I guess, with some of the box art for your films, in the 80s, you were a part of the Phoenix Entertainment Group.
Yeah, actually, the actual name for the record was Phoenix Distributors, because I think there's another company out there called Phoenix Entertainment Group.
Probably. And you released Cannibal Campout, which was, that film, the box art was pretty much covered with blood.
That's yeah, an interesting commentary. Cannibal Campout, where Saturday's campers become Sunday's brunch. That's the tagline on that film. So I guess my gay wit was coming out even then.
There you go. We'll loop back to Aristocle in a little bit, but how about you tell us about your experience with Phoenix Distributors?
Wow. That goes way back, a long time, the early days. But, yes, I had a telemarketing room. It was the early days of video. You know, you could just – there were a lot of independent stores, and there were a lot of phone rooms that were out there calling on these independent stores, and they needed product. There wasn't enough product on the shelves. And that's when – that's way at the beginning of when people were figuring out that they could pick up a video camera, and if they were talented and crafty and had some good ideas, they could make something that people would want to see, even without big multi-million dollar budgets. And you know, over the years, it changed. Obviously, there's many less independent stores that are out there. And also that the taste of the market has gotten so that people do want to see better product most of the time. And a couple areas that, that you can get around that are with horror films, because there's always an appetite for very independent horror films that are, that have some kind of funny aspect to them, funny so to speak, or like high blood gore value to them. Mm-hmm. So you have an audience that's still there for that. Then you also have an audience that maybe isn't as mainstream, and in my case, since I'm gay, I gravitated towards that and discovered that there was enough of an audience to actually be part of building a market.
And you primarily, I guess, worked with the subsidiary of the company, Donna Michelle Productions.
Donna Michelle was a label. Phoenix Distributors was our distribution arm. You know, we had a telemarketing room back then, and we sold videos. We bought and sold videos. And Donna Michelle was a label that we created for fun when we came out with Cannibal Campout. And actually, that label was created by my late partner and myself. His name was Donald. My name is Michael, and we created this fictitious character of this old woman in a rocking chair who wanted to go back to Hollywood and remember the good quality movies that they used to make in Hollywood, quality movies like Cannibal Campout, where Saturday's campers become Sunday's brunch.
So I guess you're proud of that tagline.
I was proud of it, and going back, I can't even say that maybe the producer may have come up with that, so I don't want to take credit for it, but I liked it anyway.
And you were actually surprised when I told you a little bit ago that Cannibal Campout is actually out on DVD now.
Yes, that was a big surprise. And you mentioned the label that's putting it out, and I think that's great. And it's just cool to see that there's still an audience for something that I was part of, you know, bringing out to the commercial marketplace. Close.
Yeah, and if you still have any of those old VHS tapes of Cannibal Campout, they go for like $40 on eBay.
Wow. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere in my vault, I've got some posters. Some of the original posters.
Damn. Hook me up with that. So how long did you guys keep I know that the company stayed in business until 1994 when the changeover to Aristocle happened, but how long did you guys stay on the B-movie bandwagon before, I guess, I don't know what other kind of films you guys distributed?
It was the B-movie faded out right around 94. You know, that was really dwindling, at least for me. I mean, there's other people, like you mentioned, that are putting out Cannibal Campout now, so there's still an audience, and I don't know, maybe I just personally may have lost my interest. I wanted to do something that was closer to my heart at the time. And that, plus the earthquake, had me move to Arizona. And that's where Aristocal was created. And that's where I started to figure out that there were, you know, other product that I could enjoy selling and could be a viable, profitable business.
Were there other people out there doing gay films or distributing the gay films, or was it really just people were selling their own films, or I don't know.
There were. The pickings were slim. There was a lot of, you know, there were several companies that were doing it. I think, and each company has a little bit of its own style. Some are more artistic, or quote-unquote artistic. Some deal with foreign films. I think that to a certain extent, my label has focused a little bit more on pop culture appeal, gay and lesbian themed films. So like you said, you know, you could pick up 10 Attitudes and enjoy it. I tried to do it in a way where I pick up films that I feel are what I quote unquote, quote, call authentically gay, but are still of interest to wide audiences.
And how do you usually get the word out about your films?
Well, we work with our publicist, Ed Barron, and he gets material out in a wide variety of ways dealing with all forms of the media. And we also promote, obviously, to our stores, and we work with our distribution network. And a lot of the distributors that we sell to put material out to various companies giving information and details, and that gets it out on the web all over. So it's not like we're selling every single website that carries our films, but every single website that carries our films is getting material and information on our new releases from a pipeline of information that we funnel to. And that's just something that we've kind of built over time. We have relationships with all the store buyers, with the distributors that sell to the smaller stores, that sell to chains, that sell to large stores. So, you know, we have a director of sales, Eric Peterson. He goes around the country and he talks to the different buyers and meets with them and has long relationships with them. Actually, he was involved in the marketing of the film, of the DVD for Queer as Folk when it first came out for Showtime. So it's a lot of long-term relationships, and that's what was kind of cool when you were mentioning the old Cannibal Campout days, because I, at this point in my career, I'm seeing it all come together, and contacts that I have from 20 years ago have helped me sell product now.
And would you say that the fact that you're gay and some of the other people in the company are gay, does that help when you're going around and you kind of see that other people that you're trying to sell the films to, that they kind of form closer relationships with you because of that?
I think sometimes it's helped. I think sometimes it's hurt. I've always thought sometimes when I used to go to the trade shows, particularly at the beginning, and I was selling gay product and I was mixing it in with the horror films that I used to sell, like we would just put all the films up, and I'd watch people go by and they'd look at the box cover and you know, they'd be looking at a horror film and they'd pick up a gay title, they'd run out of my booth. And then, you know, one year I happened to have a very, very attractive secretary working for me, a female attractive secretary, and it was like our sales were so much better that year. So I just kind of learned, you know, some people, it's still uncomfortable with them. The minute they hear gay, they just get, like, really tight and uptight. And not everybody, but a lot are. And, you know, you put you let them flirt with a girl at the same time, and they feel a lot more comfortable. It just kind of asserts, no, you're looking at gay products. It doesn't mean you're a homo. It's okay. Calm down.
Because I imagine when you're at, like, Cannes or the American Film Market, you're there with people from, like, Syria or God knows where. Being gay will get you stoned.
You know what?
So
it's interesting because at AFM in particular, because I've gone to that for so many years at the American Film Market, and at the beginning, I mean, I would walk into every suite there, knock on the door, do you carry gay and lesbian product? And it was like really looking for a needle in a haystack. And, you know, I would knock on some doors, and again, you're dealing with every different culture, and some of them would, like, go, no, we don't, and turn around and not want to talk to you. And some of them would laugh and just think it was funny. And it is interesting. One thing about being in the gay business and being gay is I have the opportunity to kind of bring cultures together and get different responses. And I do remember I was talking with a man from the Middle East once, and he was very cool with it. And it was my partner and I were at the AFM, and we were talking. And he had sold us a title that we had released a long time ago. And then he looked at us and he goes, "You two are gay?" And it's like, well, let's see, we're here every year together. We're talking about going home to our house together. But his response, I always laugh, and it was so sweet. He just looked at us and he goes, "Who cooks? Who cleans?" And in his mind, you know, that's how he saw the breakdown. It's like, well, you know, man does the work, woman does the cleaning, and if you're two men, then who's going to handle that?
And your house must be in disarray.
Yes, he wasn't upset by it. He was just bemused by it.
So who does the cooking and cleaning in the house?
The people that we actually hire to come in and do it. I've joined the bourgeois elite in that respect.
Oh,
and otherwise,
good for
you. It's just a mess, and I'm more of a bachelor.
And at what point did you start to think that it might be possible for you to produce your own films?
Wow. I went through my midlife crisis at 40, and realized that I really did want to have more control over it. It was a combination of different things, and part of it was, as a distributor, I wasn't finding that sexy gay comedy that I wanted to release. And so we were creating box art to promote our films, and it was very, very successful, and it was authentic, and it represented the film. But at the same time, I wanted a film that was created for what I was coming up in box art, which was mainstream gay movie, sexy, fun, interesting, and, again, something that's going to cross over and have an appeal to what I call the MTV generation, because that tends to be the generation doesn't have it, you know, that's totally cool with watching a film that has a gay theme in it. And so that was part of the initial part of it. My partner died unexpectedly 5 years ago, and So part of my rebirth, so to speak, after that took place, and I went back to college, and I was, you know, getting my life together, and I started to think, I'd like to make a movie. And so I did. And what I did, actually what happened was I met Alan Broca, who made this short called Rick and Steve, the Happiest Gay Couple in All the World, which now, many, many years later, is being produced. We were going to acquire that particular piece, and there were some legal problems in acquiring it. But I said, you know, I like your writing. I like your style. What do you have? And he pulled this project out that he'd worked on in college and said, well, I never thought that this was going to work commercially, but this sounds like what you're looking for. And I read it, and I loved it. And because it's independent and it was shot on a limited budget, I was able to green light it immediately because it was me. I was the only one making the decision. And we moved forward, and that was history.
And you even... in both Eating Out 1 and 2, you have a girl that many of us are probably familiar with from her many Asylum films, Rebecca Cochin?
Rebecca Cochin. Yes. And we love Rebecca, although she wouldn't show her boobs in our first movie, and we wanted to have some boobies, and we had to put a bunny bra on her, and now I understand she has.
In Freak Show, she walked around with her boobs out for like 10 minutes.
Well, we were the first, but we didn't get to break that cherry. But we did get to have her help break Jim Ferraro's cherry to eating pussy on screen. But that's the part two. And it's a hysterical scene between her and Jim Ferraro's from American Idol. And he's the only openly gay American Idol contestant, to my knowledge. And
I can only imagine how many are closeted.
Oh, of course, yeah. but anyway, there's a hysterical scene. It's one of the couple show-stopping scenes in Eating Out Part 2. And you have to see that because I think everybody gay or straight that is either the slightest bit open-minded cannot help but get hysterical when watching that scene.
And was there actual eating out going on, or are we all simulated in this business?
You know, I think you'll have to watch it and make your own decision about that.
There we go. Because I've talked to people that that make like softcore porn for Cinemax and everything, and they always have the stories where everything's simulated, and then once in a while they'll hire a porn girl, and she'll get far too into whatever scene that they're doing and try to step over the line.
Actually, I once did make one of those kind of Showtime light pieces. That wasn't a Showtime piece, but similar to that. I call them light erotic dramas and comedies. I've made about 4 or 5 of them, and that did happen in an alley blowjob scene. But I think it was a couple, if I remember right. So they were just like enjoying themselves a little bit too much.
Oh, there you go. Well, speaking of couples, you released a film that I've talked about in the past, not on this show, but I think I might have mentioned it on the website, the partially infamous Different Strokes, the story of Jack and Jill,
I'm losing my taglines. Yes, Jack and Jill and Jill.
Oh, yes, yeah, Jack and Jill and Jill, which featured Dana Plato in her infamous lesbian role.
Yes, exactly.
And I've spoken to the director, Michael Paul Gerard, in the past, and he didn't seem to think that there were any problems. No one ever saw it as a possible problem in releasing the film as Different Strokes. And did your legal department go over that and find that everything was peachy?
At the time, we looked into it, and we got a couple different pieces of advice. And everybody felt that it was, and it got the, you know, insurance that it needed, and so we rolled with it.
So do you actually get insurance on each film?
Well, that film came with it because that had aired on television as well. Any film that we have that's going to air on television definitely does. And we do also carry a policy for our films for DVD release. That's a little bit more general than that, but does cover that.
Okay, and I imagine that film did very well for you guys.
That film did very well, and actually we had an interesting experience with that, going back to some of the obstacles that we encounter. When we originally went to release it, that particular film did have an R rating. Or we had a non-rated, and we had an unrated, and we had an R-rated version. And at that time, retail was very concerned. We did have to only release into mainstream retail the title, the box cover, and the copy in the film that had the R rating. And then when we went to the MPAA, you have to have approval of your box cover as well as the film, and we sent the box cover in. And they said, oh, no, we don't like this, that you have two girls carrying a picnic basket going up the hill. We were afraid of what that suggests. And so then I called up GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, and I don't know if they got involved or not, but I do know that an hour or two after I had raised a pretty large ruckus with the office, they called up and told me, well, this time we're going to accept it.
But in the future, no picnic baskets.
That was the intonation, and it's just like, damn. I said, you mean to tell me that two women holding a picnic basket up the hill, and they're like, well, we're afraid of what that's going to say to children out there that might see it. And I went off. It was interesting because, I mean, that was a very light erotic film. It wasn't an Academy Award-winning film. It didn't break any huge intellectual boundaries. But just even something like that, in the long run, I think made a difference in the marketplace in terms of what can be out there. And I think for me, when I get to why am I really doing this and what's important to me, it's just to balance out the images. I think when Ellen DeGeneres first came out of the closet and she said, you know, what I'm doing is I'm not making everybody be gay. I'm just taking the menu and adding this item to the menu. And I kind of feel like that's part of the process of what I'm doing. I'm putting more things out on the plate for people to choose from.
That's good, because even today it still disturbs me when I see just rampant homophobia just outside my door. And it's surprising that everything that's advanced in the past, like, 20 years, that it's still the way that it is.
Yes, we've made huge changes, though, because I remember commenting once to an associate when we were up at Sundance, and we were you arrive in Salt Lake City and looking at the city buses that had billboards for queer folk. And I thought, when I first started putting out a few titles, that would have never happened.
No.
In fact, there was a time when I released a film called Homo Heights, and we had to make an alternative title for the exact same movie, and we made it Happy Heights. But it was like, well, do we want to sell another $5,000 and be able to pay the producers a little bit more money, or do we want to hold on to our artistic integrity and not do it? And, you know, we talked with the producers, and we all felt that it was better to sell the film, and we came up with a name that worked, and we went with it.
There you go. I don't blame you one bit. But I think we are just about out of time, and so I want to thank you for joining us. But first, let's get the plugs out there for Eating Out 2, along with anything else upcoming from your company, and, of course, the website.
Wow. Eating Out Part 2, Sloppy Seconds. It is hysterical. It's funny. It's sexy and slightly controversial because it does take a lot of pokes at the religious right. And there's a hysterical scene with the mother, and you just have to watch it and see what happens with the boy and his mother at the end of the film. And all I can tell you is it involves a porta potty.
Oh, and that's May 29th, by the way. That's out. So this Tuesday.
Yes, and also watch for Mink Stole in that film from all the John Waters films, and Jim Ferraros with all the attention around American Idol right now. Only openly gay, to my knowledge, American Idol contestant. Of at least in the top 10. So that's what's going on. Our website is www.aristocal.com. You can also pick up any title from Aristocal Entertainment at just about any of your favorite independent video retailers, major retailers, and all the online stores as well.
Awesome. So I will check out Eating Out 2 this coming Tuesday. I'm looking forward to it, and hopefully some other people listening to this will as well. And will they be able to pick up Eating Out 2 at a Blockbuster or Hollywood Video?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Excellent.
I think some of the stores, like, it's not in every single store, but usually it's in the stores that they know that most of the people that are going to want to see the film are going to be at. But if you go to that store and it's not there, ask for it. We really need that. We want store owners to know that our product is something that people really, really want. That last little plug is one of the biggest obstacles we've had is we've always had the audience, but sometimes the channels that we go through to reach the audience don't recognize that we have the audience. So if you, the audience, tell the store you want that film, it's going to help us get that film out even more.
So go rent Eating Out 2 Sloppy Seconds or buy it. And if your video store does not have it, request it, because that's what you got to do. Thank you, Michael, once again.
Thank you.
Aristocal.com is the website for all your campy gay film needs. So we will get you back on the show at some point in the future.
Thank you.
But thank you again for doing the show. And this is Greg Conley with the Your Video Store Shelf podcast. We'll be back with, I believe, another owner of a film distribution company in the coming days. So stay tuned and have a good weekend. See ya.